think that's a lesson that all of us can learn from. Two words that are very difficult to say at times: I'm sorry. Well, for a message this morning, I don't believe anyone made mention of what for day it is. Who can tell me what's, one of the children, what is today? Harrison. Father's Day. All right. So as I was, this week, I was thinking about a Father's Day message. And I preached a few Father's Day messages, and after a while, what do you say to fathers? Well, I was, on Tuesday, I was in a meeting, a work meeting, and before the meeting, as part of the introduction, we were talking about different things, and the subject came up of mountaintop experiences versus valley experiences. And we were talking about, where did we get that? Is that biblical? And started mentioning, well, yeah, the Bible talks about going through the valley of the shadow of death, and how valleys are more negative and mountaintop experiences are positive. It is. And someone mentioned how God met Moses on a mountain, and Abraham offered Isaac on a mountain. And my mind just kind of froze right there, because in my mind, I was thinking Father's Day messages, and I thought, Abraham offering Isaac. Open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 22. I don't know if you ever had a Father's Day message from Genesis 22. I know I never preached one from Genesis 22 about Abraham, but I thought about that throughout the week. And what kind of father would take his son up into a mountain and offer him, like, and do what Abraham did? I want to read the story here. Genesis chapter 22. We'll read verses 1 through 14. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up, and went unto the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes, and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder, and worship, and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father? And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand, and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven, and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. And it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. The title of the message this morning is Fathers, Withhold Not Your Child. And I get that from verse 12, when the angel calls out to Abraham just before he slays him, and he says, I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. As I pondered about that story, as I pondered over that story, what kind of father would do this? What would have to go through the mind of a dad to take his son and tie him up and sacrifice him. Now, we know that he didn't actually go through it, but I believe he had all intentions to do this. Today, we would view a father like this as psycho. Can I say that? A father that would do something like this, we would view him as a little bit psycho. Just imagine with me. I want to try to illustrate this point a little bit, because the foundation of this message is, fathers, withhold not your child. Withhold not your son, your daughter. So I want to just illustrate this a little bit. I know that children learn from illustrations, and I also know that adults learn from illustrations as well. So picture with me a father and his son. They go on this 3-day journey. Father says, let's go. Let's go worship. And he takes his son. It's premeditated. He takes his son and the servants. They take the wood. They take the fire. And they go for 3 days. And he sees Mount Moriah. And he tells the servant to stay here. And he takes his son and they go up in the mountain together. Just him and his son. They go up in the mountain. And they get there. And they start to build an altar. So they build this altar. And we'll pretend this is our altar here this morning. And so they build this altar. And they get it built. And then they take the wood. And they lay the wood on the altar. They get it all stacked up. Now normally this is where you would slay the lamb. You would put the lamb on there. And you would sacrifice this lamb. But instead, Abraham takes his only son. Now, I brought my buddy along. You can laugh at my little buddy, and I'll explain why his hair looks so funny, because I got this little doll when I was a boy. I don't remember how old I was, but this was a gift to me when I was a boy. And he got a little dirty. Anyway, so he had pretty bushy hair, and I took a scissors to his hair one time. So children, don't do that. You might live with it for the rest of your life. And if it happens to you, it'll grow out. But little dollies like this, they don't grow out. Now, so he took his son, his only son. Now, this is not a true illustration because this is a very small child. But as I did some research, this Isaac at this point was probably more so a young man. As a matter of fact, some places, he was at least a teenager, and possibly in his mid-20s. Now, let's see, Reynolds, you're in your mid-20s, 24, 25, somewhere in there. So he could have been about Reynolds' age, possibly. And Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born, so that means that Abraham was about 125, possibly, somewhere in there. There's a 100-year gap. Anyway, he takes his only son. They're up in the mountain by themselves. And I don't know if he had rope, but it says he bound him up. His only son. Bound him up. I don't know how he did that. Maybe he tied his hands together like this and his feet. I don't know what he did. But he bound him up. And it says that he laid him on the wood on the altar. Can you imagine this? Can you imagine this scene? Then he takes his knife. And he raises it up. And he's ready to slay his own son. Can you picture this scene? And I believe that in Abraham's mind, it was done. In his mind, his son was dead. As a matter of fact, if you go back in Hebrews, it says so, that he believed that God had the faith to raise him up from the dead. And so I believe he was trying to do it. In his mind, his son was dead. But he raises it, and the angel says, Abraham, Abraham. And he stops. He says, here I am. And he says, don't do it. Now I know, because I know that you fear God, because you withheld not your son from me. God knew that Abraham had the fear of God in his life because he was going to slay his son. And we say, he must have been psycho. What was wrong with him? What is wrong with a father that would do this to his own son? Tie him up, put him on the altar, and raise a knife to kill him. But we know that Abraham was not psycho. We know that there was nothing wrong with Abraham. As a matter of fact, you can read here, and it says that God praised him. He says, you did the right thing. You go back in Hebrews 11, and God says, you are a man of faith because you did this. And he is a great hero of faith. What I want to talk a little bit more about the relationship between Isaac and Abraham. What was the relationship between father and son? Let's go back to Genesis chapter 17. Genesis 17 and verse 1. And when Abraham was 90 years old and nine, the Lord appeared to Abraham and said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be thou perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abraham fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name any more be called Abram, but thy name shall be Abraham, for a father of many nations have I made thee. And I will make thee exceeding fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee. And I will establish my covenant between me and thee, and thy seed after thee, in generations, for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee, and to thy seed after thee. Jump down to verse 15. And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarai thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be, and I will bless her, and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. Then Abraham fell upon his face, and laughed, and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? And Abraham said unto God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. And God said, Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. So Isaac, this son that he was laying on the altar, that he took up in the mountain, that he tied up, and that he raised that knife over, was the promised son. God had promised all these things to him. He is a promised one. I will make of thee a great nation. There will be kings and nations shall come from him. And it wasn't Ishmael, it was Isaac. God was very specific. He was the promised son. The second thing is that Isaac, right along with that, Isaac was the only son Abraham had with Sarah, his beloved wife. Yes, he had other sons, but Isaac was the only son that he had with his beloved wife, Sarah. They couldn't have any other children, but God gave them this one special gift. And that is the child that Abraham took up in a mountain. I don't know if Sarah knew what they were doing, but Abraham took that child, that special child, up into the mountain and raised his knife to slay him. Also, we see here that Isaac was born in their old age. It says here, the verse we just read, that it was 99. And we can read in chapter 18 that they were 100 years old when Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. Abraham and Sarah had given up any hope of having children together. And this was, especially in the Old Testament times, almost a sign of God's curse upon your life. But God opened her womb, and they had a child in their old age. And this is the son that Abraham took up into the mountain to slay. And also, we see that Isaac was a miracle child. If you go to chapter 18, let's just jump to verse 14. Abraham and Sarah are questioning, how can this happen? And in verse 14, he says, is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to this time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. And we know that it happened. It was a miracle child. Sarah was past the age. It was physically impossible for her to have children. But because God came and touched her life and worked a miracle in her life, she had this child. And this is the miracle child that Abraham took up in the mountain, tied up, laid on the altar, and raised his knife to slay. All of these things made Isaac a special son to Abraham. How then could he go through with killing? In his mind, it was done. In killing this promised miracle son. He withheld not his son. Fathers, withhold not your child. God placed a test in Abraham's life, and we see it in the beginning of chapter 22 that this was a test. Verse 1. That God was tempting Abraham. He was testing Abraham. Abraham was forced to choose between what God's will was, what God was asking of him, versus the life of this special child. Can you imagine the turmoil that went through Abraham's mind as he chose between, God told me to slay my son. This is what God wants me to do. But this is the promised son. Why would God want me to do this? He's a special child. He's a miracle child. He was born in our old age. He's the only child that Sarah had. But God wants me to do it. Withhold not thy son. I can't imagine the heavy heart of Abraham on that early morning as they started that trek to Moriah. But we see that Abraham passed the test. He went ahead with it, and he withheld not his child. And because he withheld not his son, he passed that test. And that word withheld means to restrain or refrain. By implication, to refuse, spare, or preserve. And the angel says, because you did not preserve, because you did not withhold that your son, you passed the test. There is another father in the Bible that gave up his son. And that son was even more special than Isaac was. In John 3:16, it says, for God, this is the Father, so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. Jesus' desire as a son was that the cup would pass from him. We read that. As Jesus was in turmoil in the garden, and he prayed that this cup would pass from him, but he says, not my will, but thy will be done. The Father had the authority and power to withhold his son from suffering and death. God the Father had all the power and authority to say, I'm going to withhold my son, but he didn't. He withheld not his son, and he gave his son. Does God ever place a test like this to us as fathers today? Does this apply to us today? Possibly not in a physical sense like we're talking about here. But I believe this is a foundational principle for fatherhood that we need to learn from, that we need to be thinking about. Fathers, withhold not your child. The first point, I'm going to have to move right through this. Father's will for his children should align with God's will. The father's will for his child, for his children, should align with God's will. The father heart of Abraham and the father heart of God would have not allowed their sons to go through what they went through. If we're talking about the father heart of a child, and you know what I'm talking about, the heart of a father that looks on a child and cares and loves for that child, the father heart of God and the father heart of Abraham would have not allowed their child to go through what they went through. But Abraham knew he had to do it because it was the will of God. God the Father knew he had to do it because of his love for us and also his justice and all that. Sometimes a father needs to withhold not his child in lieu of God's will for your child. God has a plan for your children. He has a plan. And there are two examples that I want to give to illustrate this point. I talked to a father a little while back about his son moving away from him, moving away from the area. And he was having a very difficult time accepting that his, I'm sorry, it was actually a daughter-in-law and his, a daughter and son-in-law moving away. He had difficulty accepting that. And it seemed to me as I talked to him that he was withholding his child from the will of God. He was trying to withhold his child. He hadn't left go. There's another example I want to give, and I don't like to give personal examples, but this is more about my dad and my father-in-law. I know that when I was ordained, we knew that we had to move to Tyrone. It wasn't an option. That's where God wanted us. And I know that my father-in-law and my dad would have loved to have us stay around, to have the family around, have a son that's around. But both of them would rather have me and God, have us as a family in God's will than withhold us from God. And this is just one example of where this principle applies of withhold not your child. Some of us are young and didn't face it yet, but some of you already face, or your children getting older and being called to move out, and God calls them away, out of the area, to be used in a special way, whether it's in the mission field or just calls them somewhere else. Fathers, withhold not your children. It is God's will. If it is God's will for them to go, encourage them to go. A godly father should want his children to be in the center of God's will, whatever that is. And most likely it won't mean giving up their life, but it may mean giving up some family time, giving up seeing the grandchildren, whatever all. Number two, fathers should prepare their children for suffering. A father's desire to have their children well-liked, accepted, financially stable, healthy, that is the father heart of a child. We want that for our children. We want to have our children that are well accepted, they're well established. We want to see our children prosper. And it is natural for us to try to protect our children as much as possible in life. And we like to try to put this bubble around them so that people can't harm them and nothing happens to them. And I do want to give a disclaimer that fathers, I know we have a responsibility to protect our children, especially spiritually. We have a responsibility. And there's other areas that we have. Brother Adrian talked about the world that we live in and the response. I agree with all that. That's not what I'm talking about. But listen carefully as I read something that was written about one father's son. This was written about a father's son. And imagine if this was written about your son. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised and we esteemed him not. But he was wounded, he was bruised. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter. He was taken from prison and from judgment. He was cut off out of the land of the living, and he made his grave with the wicked. And you recognize that this is excerpts from Isaiah 53. But can you hear an angry father saying, "You messed up, and now my child has to suffer from it"? Can you imagine that? Can you hear that? That's what we hear in the world today. We try to stick up for a child. It's your problem. You got yourself into this mess, and my child should not have to suffer from it. And we get angry. This was the Father of God. He allowed, he withheld not his son because of us. And he allowed his son to go through this. And you know what? That same son that this was written about said this before he died. "Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake." Out of Matthew 24:9. The apostles, if you read the apostles, you can see examples how they suffered for the name of Christ. And they keep talking about how you will suffer. If you are a child of God, you're going to suffer for the sake of God. The reality is the child of God will not be well-liked in a sinful world. The child of God will not be accepted in a sinful world. And I believe that the relatively peaceful lives that Christians have been enjoying may not last much longer. I don't know what God has in store for us. And I don't know what we could face in our lifetime. I was just talking to my brother-in-law recently. But I don't know what we could face in our lifetime. You look at the world and what all is going on, and you think about your children, your young babies that are being born, and what are they going to face in life? I think it's very well possible that Christians may not suffer so much from government authorities, but rather from activist groups and all that. As we look at the way the world is going, I don't know. God knows all those things. But one thing we do know is that it is biblical that the child of God will not be well liked in a wicked world. And we haven't experienced that much. But what are we doing to prepare our child for that? What are we doing to prepare our child for suffering? And I don't know the answers, how to prepare our children for such a day, but I believe this concept of withholding not your child is a foundation that we can build on. Withhold not your child. We like to put that little bubble around them. We like to protect them from every little thing. But our job isn't to make sure that others treat our children right, but that our children know how to respond when they are treated wrong. Because you know what? They're going to face it. They're going to face it among their peers, and they may face it in a way that you and I do not know yet. And our job is to prepare them for that day, that they learn to make right choices regardless of what others do and regardless of what the consequences are. Number three, fathers should be God-fearing men. The angel testified that Abraham was a God-fearing man in verse 12 of Genesis 22. He says, "Now I know that you fear God." And last Sunday we talked a lot about fearing God and how it exemplified itself. And for Abraham, the fear of God exemplified itself in many different ways. As you look at his life, you see a man that tied up his son. The fear of God exemplified itself in a way by tying up his son and raising that knife. That was the fear of God that caused him to do that. It was the fear of God in Abraham's life that said, "All right, family, pack your bags. We are moving." And they say, "Where to?" "I have no idea, but we're going. God said we should go, and so we're going to go." That's pretty radical, isn't it? But it was the fear of God that caused him to do that. And I believe it's the fear of God that he allowed Lot to choose the land in spite of God's promises to him. And as you look at Abraham's life, the fear of God, for the most part, yes, he wasn't perfect. We know that he lied about Sarah, his wife, earlier. And in spite of those imperfections, those weaknesses, God can still use us. But the decisions that Abraham made was because of the fear of God in his heart. The fear of God must be greater than our love for our children. It's pretty deep, isn't it? How much do you love your children? How much would you love a son that was given to you, a miracle son? A son that God promised? How much would you love him? Do you know what? Abraham's fear of God was greater than the love for his son. And our fear of God, the fear of God in our hearts, must be greater than our love for our children. Sometimes our love for our children can get in the way of our fear of God. Did you ever have to decide between, and this, when you look at an example like this of a father that the fear of God caused him to raise the knife over his child, it seems so small. But did you ever have to decide between what you knew was right thing for your child versus allowing them to do what they wanted? Did you ever? I'm sure you fathers had to do that. You knew what was right for that child. You knew the right thing that you had to choose, but you also knew what your child really wanted, and they didn't line up. The fear of God needs to be greater than your love for your child. And that needs to be what motivates us to make the choices that we make. The best guide a father can have in making family decisions is a healthy fear of God in his life. Because I believe a God-fearing father will make the best choices for his family. Number four, fathers should command their children after them. Look back to Genesis 18. And here we have the story. I'm just going to pick one verse out. We have the story of the angels are on their way to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And he says, "Should I hide this thing from Abraham, seeing he's a righteous man?" And in verse 19, he says, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." This is God's testimony of Abraham as a father. What is God's testimony of you as a father? Not only did God know that Abraham was a God-fearing man, but he knew that he would teach his children in those ways as well. Now, the fear of God, we said this last Sunday, that the fear of God is a choice that comes through knowledge. I don't know if you remember that or not, but a fear of God is a choice that comes through knowledge, and I believe that. Fathers, we cannot make choices for our children, but we can give them the knowledge that they can make the right choice to fear God. That's what, I'm drawing a blank, is it Paul? We talked about last Sunday, he taught them when they had this altar to the unknown God, the Athenians. He gave them the knowledge of who that God was, and they had a choice. Are they going to fear this God or not? And some laughed at him. Some said, let me think about it. And some clave unto them, and they feared God. We can do the same thing. We need to do the same thing with our children. We teach our children the ways of God. We teach our children who God is, the justice of God, the love of God, and all those things. And then they have to make that choice. But we give them the knowledge. And fathers, we should command our children after them. We teach our children about God through consistent, loving discipline of wrongdoing. Recently, a father having trouble with a teenage son said that when his son was in school, the teachers were telling him that they're having problems with his son, behavior problems. And he says, "I didn't believe them because I didn't see it at home." And so he didn't believe that this child was having an issue in school. But now he's having issues when this child is older, and he says, "I think they were right." You see, it's loving, consistent discipline that teaches them about God, of who God is. That's just one way. You could have to preach a whole sermon on this. But we must consistently but lovingly discipline our children when they are wrong. And I know how exasperating it can get at times when you're in the middle of this and you discipline a child and it seems like, is it doing any good? But I believe the Bible teaches that loving, consistent discipline is biblical, and it teaches them about God. Fathers, we need to lead out. I know mothers have a strong role to play in this when they're at home with the children, but fathers, we need to lead out in this. We teach our children about God by helping them, especially the older ones, to understand why we make the decisions that we make. And just yesterday, as a family, we stood around there and we talked about a decision that we need to make as a family. And we said that, you know, if we went by feelings, we don't know if we'd want to do this or not. But we don't want to just go by feelings. We want to do what God wants us to do. If we're called to do it, then we want to do it. And so that's what we need to decide, not just if we feel like it or not. But as we do that, we teach them about God and helping them understand why we make the decisions we make. Number five, last of all, fathers should try to gain the trust and respect of their children. As I said in the opening, there's some question as to how old Isaac was at this time. But it's thought that he could be around 25 years old, possibly. And there's a 100-year generation gap here between father and son. So if Isaac was 25, that means Abraham was 125. Now tell me, if they arm wrestled, who do you think would win? Probably Isaac would be my guess. Obviously, Abraham went on a 3-day journey. And he climbed the mountain, and he had a little bit of oomph to him. But I have a feeling that based on their ages, Isaac probably could have easily overpowered his father. Do you agree with me? I think that he probably could have, okay? What would you boys do? Even some of you younger ones. But mid-20s, what would you do if your dad took you up in a mountain and said, "Let's go camp, let's go up in the mountain. Let's go up on the mountain here, up 453, let's go up on the mountain, let's worship." And you get up there, you build this altar, and then he gets out a rope and he starts tying you up. And what would you do? Would you just let him do it? Well, that's kind of you don't need to think about that too long. But imagine with me. Why did Isaac allow Abraham to tie him up and lay him on the wood? Why? Do you think it's because Abraham had the respect and trust of his son? I believe so. I believe there's probably a lot of things going through Isaac's mind as he allowed his father to tie him up. And as he laid there on the altar, on that wood, and as he saw that knife being raised over his head, I can't imagine what went through his mind. But I believe what kept him from fighting back was that he knew his father loved him, but he also trusted that his father was a God-fearing man. And if this is what God told him to do, then this is what he's going to do. And he's going to accept that. And he trusted his father, and he respected his father. We don't read of any struggle going on between the two of them. And this is also a type, as we look at God offering or giving up, withholding not his son. It was the father's will. And so, you know what? The son went ahead and did it. Jesus Christ said, I pray that this cup would pass from me, but not my will, but thine be done. And it was the father's will. And that is why Jesus went through with what he did. Fathers, what kind of relationship do you have with your child? This level of trust and respect isn't demanded, but it's earned. A level of respect and trust. Trust and respect of our children is earned through the things that we talked about in this message, I believe. Fathers that fear God. Fathers that teach their children. Fathers that have a relationship with their children. It's just something I want to challenge you in closing. Do you have that level of trust and respect? May the Lord bless each of you fathers here today. The role of a father is an important role in family life. What kind of influence are you having, are you leaving on your children? Fathers, withhold not your child. Teach them in the right way. Prepare them for life and allow God to use them for his kingdom. Let's kneel for prayer.